It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Bam, 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 bam. Oh, hi. It's me, Matthew Patrick Davis. I play the mother in Barbarian. Obviously, right? This is what you expected her to look like under all the rubber bits. Of course you did. You mother lovers, you. It was bonkers. Whether, you know, one day I'm forcibly breastfeeding Justin Long, another day I'm Kool-Aid manning my way through a wall and then ripping someone's arm off and beating them to death with it. Or my final day shooting, they were putting me in this flight rig and then put my boobs on over the flight rig so that they could shoot me like Peter Pan style, like flying off the water tower. I didn't actually fly off the water tower. They did it horizontally, where the camera moved horizontally towards me. But I was in the air, like dressed as mother, looking like Peter Pan. It was pretty funny. I mean, the wildest day on set was with Justin. There was the breastfeeding. And then, I don't know if you all know about this, but there's a deleted scene where I bite the head off of a rat and then baby bird it into Justin's mouth. And we shot that on the same day that we did the breastfeeding scene. They had a real rat, and then they had this prosthetic rat, and they had this bloody prosciutto that was meant to look like the masticated remains of the rat. And before we did that, I was like, Justin, are you okay with this? And he's like, well, it's definitely the grossest thing, so we have to do it. It was a good testament to attitude. He has a good attitude about things. If you Google Entertainment Weekly Barbarian Rat, they have that deleted scene on their site. It's available if you buy the movie digitally. Also, the deleted scenes are there. But if you want to see it for free, you can do that. And then don't go out there. Don't go out there. Or Barbarian style, don't go down there, right? Don't go into the door in the basement and then in the door into the sub basement. Just don't go down there, right? And also another piece of advice is when you're offered a hairy milk bottle, just drink it. Drink it. Ba, 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 ba. Thanks, mother lovers. Bye-bye.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin. And they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Review Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. We really appreciate all the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, I just want to give a quick shout-out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Got to shout-out Brian. He's done such a great job with the website. It looks great. We have all of our episodes and interviews from the very first episode to our weekly release. Check that out if you want to, you know, listen on our website. And we also have all of our interviews in the interviews tab. We've done some incredible interviews in the past with some horror legends. It's a lot easier to find them there than it is on your Apple Podcast, Spotify. So definitely check that out. We have our store. We have some t-shirts and we also have hoodies. Now, if you want to check that out, we have mouse pads, tumblers, Shan's Etsy page is attached as well. If you want to check those out. But definitely check out the hoodies. It's still wintertime. If you're in Florida, you might get to wear it once before it's summer. So shout out to Florida weather. But check out our hoodies. We also have all of our social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. We love interacting with our fans. Movies like this week and last week and like Halloween Ends really blows my mind, honestly, that we have so many comments from people all over the world. Literally comment on our post with different opinions. It's super cool that we've met so many people from this podcast all over the world, and I truly appreciate it. And, you know, keep asking questions, dropping comments. We love reading them. And I'm going to shout out to our Patreon as well. We call it Blood Donors. We have a traditional monthly reoccurring kind. And, you know, like we've always said, this money does not go into our pocket. We don't make anything from doing this show. We just love doing it. It just helps us pay for what it takes to make it. Uploading YouTube videos, the sites we host all of our files on, et cetera, et cetera. So you take a really big burden off of us. Or you're a big fan of a movie, you're like, man, I'm a big fan of this movie. I want them to review it. We have those one-time donations available as well. So definitely check out our website and our Patreon. Tonight is my pick for, you know, January. It's just like a freelance pick month. I chose 2022's Barbarian. Like last week, with X, Barbarian came out in 2022. X did as well. Two movies that I'm a big fan of, and I'll talk more about at the end. I really like this movie. I definitely don't think it's perfect, but it was refreshing. It has a great cast. I love the concept, the premise of it, and I'm a big fan. I've watched it several times since it came out, and it's on HBO Max if you want to stream it. But yeah, I mean, for my picks, I usually pick movies I like. I'm just going to be honest. I don't pick ones that I struggle with or some stuff like that, but I'm sure we'll do a month eventually where we pick movies we hate or something like that. So that'll be rough, but I'm looking forward to doing it as well. I like this movie. I like this movie a lot, honestly. Brian, what's your thoughts?
First of all, it's good to be back. Thanks to everybody for their messages last week. But yeah, so as far as this movie goes, it's not bad to me. I mean, it's all right. I think when we all first saw this and we were all kind of holding off our thoughts in our group chat, so, you know, as not to influence anyone else, you know, I was, as usual, the last one to see it. And also, if you haven't seen this movie, go in completely blind. Don't listen to this show. Go watch it first. But yeah, I think me and Dustin pretty much said kind of the same thing at the same time in the group text. Like I typed it out. I think he pasted what he was already like ready to hurry up and send for his opinion anyway. And you know, that I thought that this was a very captivating movie, and I really liked it a lot until the ending. To me, it didn't stick the landing. It wasn't even close. So it went from like a great movie to somewhere in the it's fine range to me because of the ending. I think Georgina Campbell killed it. Always loved Bill Skarsgård. I just wish he had a little bit of a bigger role, but Campbell carried it anyway. Director and writer, Zach Cregger. I've never seen anything else he's done. Very talented filmmaker. That's very obvious. Like, it's very obvious that he has a bright future ahead of him. I just feel like that there's a better ending somewhere there. Maybe it suffers from that age-old issue we see often with, you know, writing and directing the same movie. But I don't know. Anyway, props to this movie for being original. It's just bonkers. And, you know, especially with its unpredictability. And if you watch it more and more, there's lots of little subtle things to pick up on. And I mean, yeah, there's definitely like layers here and parallels with the storytelling and the characters. But overall, and mostly because of the ending, it was just okay for me. I guess I won't be owning this movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so let me start off the bat and say I like this movie. You know, kind of like Nico, this movie's not perfect by any stretch. I mean, I like that it's very original. And again, to kind of piggyback on something that Dustin says, even though I am a fan of sequels and trilogies and movies going on forever, if they're done right, I'm okay with with IPs being done over and over again if they're good movies. But I do enjoy original content. I enjoy original ideas, and this movie is very unique and very original. Not just the plot, but how it's made. It's almost like a weird, real three-act structure. Like, it's almost like a play that's a movie. And I really do appreciate just how separate everything is. So, I mean, it gets points for being creative. It gets points for being original. And again, this movie has really unique things to say, I think. It just, the ending really does bring it down for me. Even, not even just the very end, but there's a part before that I'm like, I feel like I've seen this movie monster before. And I'll wait until we get there, I guess. But I think that's the part where it wasn't original, and that brought it down for me. Now, I still enjoy the movie. Look, this movie's, excuse my language, I don't know why I'm saying that on this show, this movie's fucking hilarious, okay? Like, there's some really funny shit in this movie, and I like when horror and comedy touch, but they're also separate. Like, I don't mind a spoof, but I like a good horror movie that's got comedy, like a Scream, or, God, there's countless other examples. You know, Zombieland is a horror movie, but it's fucking hilarious. Like, that same thing to me, like, I like when they can touch, but they don't overlap, if that makes sense. I think you get horror in this movie, you get suspense in this movie, and you get comedy. I like the cast, too. Justin Long, who the first time I saw it, I forgot was in the movie. I know I'm not alone in that, but I'm like, oh shit, Justin Long. Bill Skarsgård, who I love the casting of for a reason that I'll wait until we do the scene by scene here in a minute, but I love the casting of him in this movie, even though he didn't have a bigger part, I wish he had. So all in all, it's a good watch. It's a very interesting watch, but I almost find myself, and it's still one of my favorite horror movies of last year. You know, it's in my top 10 to 15. It's just not super high, but I feel like I want to like this movie more than I actually do. That, like, I keep finding reasons, like, I should really, really love this, but for some reason I can't put my finger on why I only like it.
That's interesting. Like, I'm very curious to hear what the, when you were talking about the villain, that you've seen it before in other movies. Like,
I feel like there's a lot of movies that have this really gross-looking woman with big boobs. But, like, I feel like that's a very common monster trope these days. It's really all that I meant.
Chapter two.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, even going back to The Shining, I mean, really.
That's true.
It's not just in Chapter Two. There's a few other ones, too.
Isn't that in one of the M. Night movies? Anyway. July 24th, 2022, I went and watched Nope in theaters, and I texted you guys. Just saw a preview for a movie called Barbarian. Looks interesting. And that trailer and then the finished product is part of the reason why I've told you guys I don't watch trailers anymore. That's one of the contributing factors. That and Halloween Ends, like, that was enough for me in 2022 to be like, nope, not doing it. Because while I like the trailer compared to the movie in this regard, like how they, it was a complete swerve. Nothing about what you got in the back half of this movie was shown in that trailer. It just looked like it was going to be Airbnb, like, girl checks in, she doesn't check out type deal. And that's not what we got. So I like that they held some mystery to it, but I had really high hopes and I was let down by this movie because of the ending. Like you said, like you guys said, the back half of the movie to me, like I told you guys this in the group chat, multiple times. It's just, I feel like the first part of the movie was so well done and so particular and so meticulous in how they presented this story. And then it's almost like once they got to the back half of the movie, they're like, oh shit, we're running out of time. Let's still get this stuff in. And so they rushed through all this stuff. Like they showed us stuff and didn't expand on it. And it's not that I needed explanations on some of the stuff, which we'll get to in the scene by scene. But a lot of the stuff they just briefly introduced it to you. It's like so I went to my niece's birthday party this last weekend. She's 3 years old. And I was watching her open gifts. And I told my mom, I was like, you know, this has to be so confusing for little kids. They open a gift, and then as soon as they open it and see what it is, it's okay, let's take it away, and here's another one. That's what the back half of this movie felt like to me. It's like they're going to show you something and hint that this is going to be a main thing. We're going to see this storyline play out, but it's like, okay, on to the next thing. And it's like, well, there's no real payoff to it. And then the ending, I just felt like it was a huge cop-out just to kind of let everyone go home happy. So the ending really fell flat. It took it down multiple points from my overall rating. But that's not to say I hate the movie. It's still an enjoyable movie to watch. Like, it's an easy watch. It's a fun watch. I think the acting's really good. I think Georgina Campbell's absolutely gorgeous. Andy, if you're listening to this, Andy Matichek, I'm sorry if you didn't hear that. But, I'll watch it again, but I'm not really in a hurry to do so, but I'm not going to shy away. It's just kind of a movie that's there.
That's fair. Any more opening thoughts? We just jump into the scene by scene. All right, let's do it, guys. The film starts with a creepy exterior shot of a house as opening credits roll. It's raining really hard as Tess parks outside this house. She reads the check-in instructions and walks up to the house. She punches in the code for the key to no success, but tries again and it works. However, the key is missing and she tries to call for help, but voicemail. She's very frustrated. She looks at the neighborhood and gets back in her vehicle. She sees a light on inside and rings the doorbell. A man answers the door and she asks, who is he? The two are both confused. He says he's renting the place, and she says she is as well. He checks her phone, and the booking looks right. He invites her inside so they can call. She's hesitant, but she does go inside. Title card. She says she has to go to the bathroom and ask to see his reservation here. She's jump-scared by Keith as she goes back into the living room. She says his reservation looks right as well. And I wrote, they're both befuddled. Tess says she'll go find somewhere else to stay. Keith says the neighborhood doesn't look safe and says to stay here and call some hotels. He gives her the Wi-Fi info and asks if she wants something to drink. She declines on the tea and the wine. Tess calls a hotel, but they're all booked up. Keith remembers there's a big medical convention in town. All hotels will most likely be taken. He proposes she just stay here and they both get a free stay. He says he'll take the couch and she can take the bedroom. She says she's kind of picky, though, and needs clean sheets. Keith brings in her luggage and she unpacks in the room. She looks through his wallet and sees his ID and takes a picture of it. She takes it to him and goes to wash up. Keith is at the table and asks if she wants some wine, but she declines. He waited to open it so she would trust him. He says it's about another hour before the bedding is done. He asks what brings her to town. Job interview, she says. Research position for a documentary filmmaker. Keith saw the movie and Tess is shocked. He says she should interview him. He's one of the founders of the Lion Tamers. They seem to be hitting it off now. Tess is drinking wine now as the two continue to converse. They discuss the differences in life experiences between men and women. Keith tells her that girls can be heartbreakers too. They're putting the bedding on and being playful. They share a smile and he thanks her for the night. She says it was fun and they share an awkward stare. Keith goes to the couch now. Later that night, she hears a screeching noise and she sees the doors open. She goes out to the living room when she hears Keith making weird noises. She calls his name, but he's still asleep, seemingly having nightmares. She walks over to him and shakes him, and he sits up screaming. He asks what she's doing. She says her door was open and he was making noises. She asks if he opened the door, and he says no. She goes back to bed, locking the door. The next morning, Tess wakes up and is relieved that the door is still locked. She panics when she sees the time. She goes to leave for her interview and sees a sweet note for Keith who wishes her luck. And he had to leave the key in the, and for her to leave the key in the box. She truly sees how run down this neighborhood is now in the light. She arrives to her interview and smiles at Keith's ID picture. She meets Catherine, and at the end, she asks Tess where she's staying. Catherine says she shouldn't be there with a lot of shock on her face. Just be careful, she tells her. She tells her she's going to call her tomorrow. It was great meeting her. Tess heads back to the house, and she's terrified when a homeless man runs towards her yelling, "Hey, come here." She makes it inside the house, and he yells, "Come out that house!" All right, Brian, that's opening set of scenes I got. What do you think?
Yeah, so I usually don't do these sort of fun facts off the bat, but I saw this and I kind of had to, and it's pretty freaking cool to me. But also have a question regarding this too. But the title of the movie has three different layers. You know, it's a nod to the story's main setting being on Barbary Street. Okay. Also, it's barbaric themes, of course. But the coolest thing to me is that the title Barbarian only uses the letters from the word Airbnb. But Nico, you said earlier that, you know, before that Zach Krieger said that it was a coincidence in an interview.
Yes, he said that he saw YouTube comments about the Airbnb and the 476, that they were both, he was mind blown as well on both of those. Like, it was just coincidence.
Yeah,
I take him at his word, but you know, who knows?
I don't know if I'll buy that, but we'll see. How about Zach Krieger? How about you come on the show and set us straight and let's talk about it? How about that? This maybe seem weird to say, you know, right off the bat, but this is my favorite set of scenes in the movie. I love this entire first act of the film. You know, there's so much tension, even with the way Krieger shoots it. You know, it's ominous. And on top of that, there's so much that plays to those like layers that we get even more of, you know, upon rewatches right here. The rain, the cinematography, the soundtrack from Anna Drubik is almost like Malignant, the movie Malignant to me. And if her name sounds familiar, she's also composed the music for the Fear Street trilogy, to which we have covered 2/3 of on don'tgooutthere.com. But here, you know, we don't know as audience members if Keith is trustworthy. Tess doesn't know that. Hell, we don't even know what the fuck's going on here at all, which honestly I love at this point. You know, and what there is a lot of here is character development, and just so much that plays out later in the movie from their discussions here, like, you know, the generalizations of men and women that they mention. But also, I love how both of them pretty much stick to their character traits throughout. Mostly Tess, because spoiler alert, she lasts longer. But you know, Tess with her cautious and yet giving and caring nature that, you know, ends up getting her into some shit later, you know, and something she has to basically put aside at the end to survive, which is kind of the reverse of what we see later with AJ, but we'll get to that. But it's showing basically, you know, that all of the characters have different traits, different ways of approaching things, and yet still all kind of end up in the same spot because of their decisions until the end. But the way all this plays out, where you have this tension with Tess, and you know, as she calms down throughout the conversation, you calm down as the audience member. That's very good writing to me. I thought that was very cool. But both Skarsgård and Campbell kill it here. I would have personally loved to see their dynamic all the way through, because, man, I mean, they really had really good chemistry together as actors. Plus, I would have loved to have known what, you know, Keith's nightmares were from, for example. More on that even. But we're definitely about to get a kink thrown in that, which, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of. But right now, this movie is a 9 or 10 right now for me.
I actually agree with you. This is my favorite set of scenes, too, because it really is a really very well shot, almost like thriller. Like I said, this movie is three movies in one. You know, it's like I said, a three-act structure, like, for real. This part is very creepy and very scary. And again, I've actually been in a situation where I've showed up at a double-booked Airbnb. It's very frustrating, so I could relate right off the bat to what these two are going through. It's very awkward when you have to kind of kick people out or let people in or however you got to do it. Like, it's a very awkward exchange. They handled it better than the people that we had to boot out there, but that's nonetheless. But your senses are already heightened here, partially because in my mind, at least me, now maybe everyone else is different, but me as a viewer, I see Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise in my head as a villain. So I'm automatically inclined in my brain to think he's the villain of this movie. And it's shot that way on purpose, which you kind of touched on, Brian. Like, it is written that way. It's shot that way to make you think that Bill Skarsgård could be up to no good as Keith. And my brain is, again, just automatically going there with it because I see Pennywise in this man. Like, he's so good at being that bad guy that I'm already there. And even though he keeps saying the right things, your guard is up. Because Tessa's guard is up. And so once she starts to kind of unwind, I really like this set of scenes because this feels like a genuine human interaction. It feels like a woman who's scared who's in a house with a man she does not know, that it's raining. She's in a place she's not familiar with. Very scary situation. And then you have Keith who, rightfully so, hey, you just woke me up in the middle of a dead sleep, man, in the middle of the night. Like, I have a right to be, you know, kind of upset, but he handles it pretty well, or at least to him, he handles it pretty well. And again, they start to chit-chat, and that's some of my favorite stuff in this movie. It's just their genuine connection. You almost want them, you know, normally I don't, but you almost want them to hook up, but I'm kind of glad they didn't go that route. Like, that's probably the best route. But, I mean, he even goes so far as to wash her sheets for her because she has a thing with clean sheets. Like, that's very interesting. And then one thing I didn't like is this thing where she wakes him up in the middle of the night. Like, I don't know why that was in there. Like, I didn't really care for that. Like, I know that she heard noises and was scared and stuff, but I don't know. I just felt like that was, I don't know, that felt kind of shoehorned into me. But anyway, I don't blame Keith for being mad there too. But, you know, then she has the job interview, and I felt like, I'm glad they put that here, but it didn't, like, lead to anything else. So, I don't know, maybe it just felt like some filler in the screenplay to me. But you get back to this house, and it's not what you would expect it in the, you know, the night before where it's dark outside. You go and it's light, and it's in this run down piece of shit area of town, but this one nice-ish house is still standing. Like, I think that's, I'm glad they kind of gave us the big scope of that. And lastly, would you not tell a guy that was coming to you, calling you girl or boy to get out of that house, would you not tell him to fuck off and do the same thing Tess did? Because I probably would have. So just the fact that I can relate to her actions in this part. Now, Tess makes some really dumb decisions here in a little bit. But if a guy came running up to me and was saying, get out of that house, get out of that house, and I didn't know who he was, I'd be just as scared as him as I was as going back in that house.
Yeah, so I love the cold open that we get with the rain and then the shot of the house as she's pulling up. Also, it's a very creepy score that we get and great font choice on the opening credits. I know Brian appreciates a good font. But no, I thought that looked really good. It didn't show us. Like you said, Mike, we don't know how bad this neighborhood is. And because we pull up, it's a normal-looking house. Looks nice. And we know it's Detroit. Say what you will about that. But it's just very well done with how she arrives at the house. And then one of the things I noticed, though, man, that front door was awful loose. Like a stern push, and that bitch is flying open. I don't know about y'all, but my front door seals a lot better than that one. That was like a bedroom door. That's not unique to this movie. A lot of movies do, and it pisses me off every time. I love this initial little swerve we get here. The setup makes it look like you guys said, looks like he's going to be the villain. And the trailer certainly pointed it that way or painted it that way. When I saw it, I was like, okay, he's going to be like he's going to kidnap her. But doesn't really, it doesn't play out that way. And, you know, it's a very natural tension. A female late at night in an Airbnb in a town that she's not familiar with and a random guy is already there. Like, that's a terrifying scenario for a young lady to be in there. And I thought that they gave us a very well-timed jump scare here because it's a very tense scene. And then after, you know, when he grabs his phone there, it's just that was a very well-timed jump scare. And it was even more unsettling to me when he was persuading her to stay, though, because it was borderline in your mind. It's like, okay, is he being a good guy? Like, he's concerned, doesn't want her to leave and go out in the middle of the night? Or is he trying to trap her and keep her here? Like, what's his motive? Because you don't know. And then the whole build and the dynamic between the two characters is great. I think they both acted their asses off in this opening set of scene. It just captures the awkwardness of the situation perfectly. Like, they're both awkward, and then they kind of warm up to each other, and you could tell she's kind of crushing on him by the next morning. Like, I thought that was awesome. And then, you know, another thing that points to that is I think it was a great choice to shoot the scene as time's progressing. We get the shot of the washer and dryer, like, pointing towards the living room, showing that the washer and dryer is off. Like, they're just naturally having conversation. They're having a good time in there. They've forgotten all about the laundry. I honestly expected it to turn sour any moment. So I think that's a great diversion tactic to have that not be the case. It was funny when he said, "Do I look like some kind of monster?" Because as you guys said, like, it's fucking Pennywise. Yeah, buddy, you do look like a monster. But I thought that was a nice little touch to the writers. Then just gets creepy as hell. We get the weird screeching noise as she's sleeping. Her door's open. Keith's making all kinds of weird dying animal noises on the couch there. Who the fuck sleeps like that? Buddy must have some night terrors like Todd from Wedding Crashers. But I actually didn't mind that, Mike. I know you said it just felt kind of shoehorned in, but I didn't mind it because with the door being open and him not being the one open, like, it just kind of puts it in your mind. Okay, maybe there is someone else in the house there, which we find out there is. And then when she walks outside in the daylight, it's just like, what a shithole. Like, if I would have pulled up and saw the surrounding, like, if it was daylight when she arrived, she saw that, she'd have been better off sleeping in her car in the parking garage at Ford Field. Fuck that. I ain't staying in that neighborhood. But, and then, yeah, last thing is a hobo running at me in this neighborhood. Nah, I'm all the way out, man. I don't care if he's trying to warn me. I don't care if he's trying to talk to me about our Lord and Savior. I'm out. Like, this job's just not for me. I'm going back home. I think she was from D.C. It looked like her tags on her car was with D.C. I'm gone. That shit was nerve-wracking. But
I ain't gonna lie. Dude, that's another thing. If I woke up the next morning and realized the neighborhood I was in, I don't know if I would have gone that interview.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's rough stuff. But
that one down.
It was funny, though, once, once she gets to the interview and the concern on the interviewer's face, like, you're staying where? So that should know, like, all Detroit's not like that, I guess. But no, I agree, Brian. If I were to rate the opening set of scenes as a standalone, man, it's probably 9 or 10. It's fantastic. The tension, it's got everything you want. Tension, absolutely. Acting, mood, atmosphere, score, lighting, all of the other hot button words that we always use. It's got it all. Right. So
cinematography, you forgot. Cinematography.
Yeah.
Mood, atmosphere.
The score is its own character. Don't forget that one either.
And it's got a character that can certainly call me sometime.
And the rain is his own character.
That's right.
I'm just kidding.
Yep. No one's dick got whacked, but.
Well.
I did. All
right, she calls 911, but they say they have no available units for her to calm down. Tess collects herself in the bathroom, but realizes there's no toilet paper. She goes into the basement and gets some, but the door closes and she's locked downstairs. She looks around the basement and finds a weird, out-of-place rope. She pulls it and a secret door opens. She looks down the dark hallway and says, nope, and sits on the stairs. She uses a big mirror and a light to brighten the hallway up so she can see what's down it. She walks down the hallway and finds a secret room with a camera, a filthy bed, and a bucket. There's bloody handprints all over the wall. Tess storms out terrified. She hears a knock and bangs on the window. He laughs and she tells him she's stuck. She gives him the key and she tells him we gotta get out of here. She's panicking and he asks what she saw. She explains and he doesn't seem too scared. He says he wants to go look and says for her to calm down. She says he can go look, but she's leaving. He asks for just a moment to talk. He apologizes and says he wants to go see it. She doesn't have to go with him. He asks her to wait just in case he gets locked inside too. 30 seconds, just wait here. He goes into the basement and she goes to the edge of the stairs and asks if he sees it. He says yeah, but nothing after. She goes downstairs and calls his name. The door almost shuts, but she catches it. She uses a chair to keep it propped open. She goes back into the dark hallway and uses her phone as a light. She doesn't find him in the secret room. She finds another hidden door and goes down another set of dark stairs. She calls for Keith, and he faintly calls back to her. She cries out for him. She contemplates going back but continues going down the steps. She hears Keith faintly and walks through this dark hidden tunnel. She finds cages with food bowls in them. Suddenly Keith appears crawling towards her. He tells her someone else is down here. Someone bit me. She says we need to go, but he keeps saying to go the other way. Suddenly a large naked woman runs up bashing Keith's head against the wall, killing him brutally, and Tess is in shock. We're in California now. It's a beautiful day as AJ Cruz is jamming out in his convertible. He gets a call from the studio. They say hi and they discuss something that just came through, a troubling development. Megan Maddox and her lawyer have made a case against you. You were sexually aggressive towards her and they'll be starting an investigation on you. He asks about the pilot and he's told he will not be involved. I'm fired? He calls her a bitch and says it's blown out of proportion, which is probably not what you should do in this situation. He's furious now, but they tell him to relax. They tell him there will be a story in the Hollywood Reporter on him. She's saying you raped her. He goes silent and says he'll call back. He pulls over in disbelief. AJ is with his financial consultant, Jeff, and they discuss his finances and what he plans on doing. AJ has 3 months of finances available. He has some small income from some Michigan properties, but it's his mortgage here killing him. Jeff tells him at the end of this week, he's giving him his files and suggests he finds a new wealth management team. AJ sees the article on his phone as he walks through the airport. Robert tells him absolutely not to contact Megan. He asks, what rental? AJ is in Detroit, and he's told he isn't supposed to leave the state in case of developments. AJ is in shock he might be arrested. AJ picks up some keys for his property, and he gets the address. All right, Brian, that's the next set of scenes we got. What'd you think?
So half of this is still the first act to me. So like I said, you know, I still love the first part of this with Tess and Keith. You know, again, the shots down in those caves I think are brilliant. That shot of Keith crawling on all fours back towards Tess, you know, saying shh, is just absolutely amazing. Logistically, though, it's a little confusing because unless he was like totally turned around down there, she just came from the way out and literally was like right there. So I guess I would have expected him to be like pulling her that way or you know, it was just logistically a little confusing there, if that makes sense. Like, Tess is screaming, this is the way out again. So maybe he's confused or whatever, but it irritated me. It was like she all they had to do was just turn around and run that way with Tess. And it's just, I don't know. It just, why the fuck don't you just get up there and run with her? So I don't know. Maybe that was just me, but it irritated me a little bit. But backing up just a little bit, this kind of goes to what Tess was touching on earlier about men, you know, in general, when Keith is like, I'm going to go check it out immediately, despite what Tess was saying to him. So, you know, I like the little callback there, and you know how it fits with the character traits that they were kind of establishing and talking back and forth with in that last set of scenes with him and, you know, with her and how she is caring and wants to help anybody. You know, she's kind of a, quote, like me second type of person. And that kind of helps get herself into this shit. Now, this abrupt change right here with AJ's introduction. And I think this is like a either you hate it or like it thing from what I've seen on the internet. You know, I get it both ways. I mean, it's a preference, but either way, there's no arguing that it definitely deflates the tension that we've built up through the whole first 45 minutes of this movie. We get a huge tone change. Like, it's almost jarring starting over like this. And, you know, especially because, I mean, you don't get something saying how much time has passed or anything. It's just like, bam, you know, and Justin Long, man, I mean, he's one of those actors that I used to hate, like, but now I truly, honestly appreciate him. That Joker has so much damn range. He does a fantastic job of making me hate him in this movie. And that's nothing but great writing and acting. I think he's a narcissistic piece of shit. And his introduction really is fantastic. I mean, that's Donovan's Riki Tiki Tavi on the radio. And if you listen to the lyrics to that song, I'm sure it was chosen on purpose here.
Great song. Also love Donovan.
And, you know, when he finds out about the allegations and then pulls over and stares at the ocean, you know, it kind of gives you that first person perspective there, and it pauses. I thought that was a really great shot. You sit there just like him, like, holy shit, like, what's going on here? You know, you are almost in the same position as he is. Not that you're getting the allegations, but you're just like, holy shit. So it gives you as an audience member even a second to just stare into the abyss like he is. And I thought that was really cool. The rest of this is really just some great character development as far as AJ is concerned. You know, we get his character traits with being, like I said, a gigantic selfish douchebag, you know, hurting other people for his own gain. And that groundwork definitely comes back into play later as far as his character arc goes as well. Now, would I like to have maybe focused on the Keith and Tess thing, you know, and what's going on down in the basement more? Yeah, but I'm fine with another wrinkle here as long as it kind of all ties together well. I do really hate that Keith is gone, though. I really loved his character.
Yeah. So, okay, first of all, call 911. What do you mean you have no units available? Like, not a single cop can mosey on down and just check it out? I don't know. I've never lived in the greater Detroit area, so I wouldn't know.
Where's RoboCop?
I was going to say, come on, man. Hey, where's Deputy Dewey when you need him, Dustin? Huh? Come on.
He would have solved this shit like within the first 10 minutes.
Uh huh. Okay.
This RoboCop was from Detroit.
That's fair. See, there you go. I think RoboCop's probably dead by now. RIP to RoboCop. He's out of commission. Okay. So, anyway, yeah. Here's the thing. I like this character stuff with Tess and Keith, but you really have two different people because while, yes, she's caring and kind and like, you know, like a me second person, it does put her in a bad situation. Like, first of all, she did. Now, normally I do not complain. I've said this before. I normally am very lenient when it comes to horror movie characters and the decisions that they make. I really am, because I can immerse myself in the movie and understand that it's just a movie. It's not real life. People are going to do dumb things to move the plot along. Okay. So I can escape that, but she makes some really stupid choices in this movie to me. And partially it's because she's me second, like Brian said, like she listens to Keith, which honestly, Keith, my man, if Tess is coming out scared to death and wants to leave, should probably just listen to her. But you almost take, and I like Keith as a character, but he almost takes this like, white knight approach, like this curious guy. It's like, let me check it out. I'm the man. Like, brr. Like, he didn't say it that way, but that's definitely his intention. And he ends up getting screwed over too. Like, they both come at it from different ways. They both end up in some deep shit because of it. So, again, I think this is a good looking, you know, scary woman thing, but I feel like I've seen it before. Maybe that's all I meant by that. Now, honestly, spoiler alert, she's actually not the villain in this movie, but I'll save that for when we get there. I said she was, but she's really not the actual villain. But anyway, I thought it was a cool kill on Keith. But I'm like you, Brian. I wanted more of Skarsgård. Like, he just elevates the film so much and the stuff that he's in. Like, I would have liked for him to make it and have an interaction with AJ. Speaking of AJ, we get a complete tonal shift here. And I think it's okay. Like, I think it works. And I said off the top, I like that this movie is different. It goes for something very out there because you just don't get it a lot. Like, here we go. Somebody dies. And the next thing we see is somebody driving down the highway in California and they're bebopping to Donovan. Shout out to Donovan, by the way. Love the song Season of the Witch. But he's bebopping to Donovan, and then same thing with Skarsgård. We are used to Justin Long playing these hilarious characters, these almost mostly likable characters, even going back to Jeepers Creepers, Dodgeball. He's hilarious in that. We're so used to him playing these likable characters that he does it's a 180 on the, it's the same as Skarsgård. We're used to him playing villain. Now he's kind of playing a nice guy. You get Justin Long, who's used to playing kind of the nice guy. Now he's the villain, and he is a true piece of shit. Like, clearly something happened in what he was accused of because of the way he handles it. Calls her a bitch. It's more, he's way more concerned about the pilot and him not being part of it than he is these accusations. And I think that shows me right away, I'm not supposed to like this guy, and I don't. And he just treats people like crap, which we're going to get into here when he's talking to his mom and stuff. I just know that, oh man, this guy's very unlikable. So all in all, I think the kind of separation that this movie gives us around the 46 and a half minute mark is jarring the first time you watch it. Cause you kind of, Brian mentioned the audience that doesn't have a chance to catch up, except when he's looking out into the great beyond, but you really don't have a chance to catch up when you realize, wait, what the hell? Wait, all this is fine and dandy, but what the hell happened to Keith the Test? Why are we so far away from that? I was genuinely confused the first time I watched it, but upon some rewatches, I actually like it.
Yeah. So aside from a hobo running at her in broad daylight and scared the shit out of her and then seeing what the neighborhood looked like in the daytime, now there's no available police units in the area. This is not the greatest sales pitch from the city of Detroit so far. But she was also, when she gets inside and she's looking around the house, whatever, she was way too calm about the door closing behind her and locking. I don't know. I just feel like that should have freaked her out a little bit more than it did. She just sat down on the steps oops, oh well, and she didn't freak out till she realized she didn't have her cell phone. But when she finds that little door there and the door opens, that's when the plot really thickens. What's actually going on here? Is Keith involved? And her reaction was perfect. Nope. And it was funny because, like I said, I saw the trailer for this movie when I went to see the movie. Nope. And that's exactly how Daniel Kaluuya said it in the movie. Just nope, not doing that. I love it because that's how I'd react. A lot of horror movies would be a lot shorter, but a lot less deaths if people just minded their fucking business and just said nope and went the other way. It was pretty ingenious thinking there to make that that makeshift flashlight with the mirror and the light to try to look down the hallway. I like that, but she did what she shouldn't have done. Don't go in there. I know our show is called Don't Go Out There, but the destination is really irrelevant most of the time. Most horror movies and victims would survive by staying put. Just stay where you are. But we get a great score as she's navigating this disgusting dungeon. I thought that everything about that was well done and awesome to build more suspense. And then when Keith shows up, that's a major sigh of relief. It's like, okay, he's not involved, and he's safe, but... it's a little alarming though when he's stopping her from leaving. You don't know her, bro. If she wants to leave, she can. He was a little too assertive in trying to get her to stay there when she was hell bent on getting out. And then fuck this place, man. She finds the stairway to hell there and she hears the yelling, help. I'm leaving. We're calling the cops again and at least waiting upstairs. I'm definitely not going down there. Keith, you seem like a nice guy, but you're kind of on your own until someone else gets here. I'm not cut out for this. Then, holy shit, Naked Cave Lady comes in out of nowhere and smashes his head in. I thought that was brutal, unexpected, very well done. The effects look great. And that's, the action really steps it up. Business picked up, as JR would say, from the rest of the world. And then it's just, like you said, it's a complete vibe change as we meet AJ. We don't really know the time frame, which apparently was a couple weeks later, we can find out later, but we don't know, is this happening simultaneously? Is this happening the next year, the next month? What's going on? And then we just go from a dingy murder basement to sunny California. But that nice vibe is short-lived as his situation gets pretty grim in itself. Honestly, his whole backstory, his whole storyline is very uncomfortable. And honestly, I don't know if they should have included it. Like, maybe not as detailed as they did. Like, they could have went a different direction and still got the desired result of him being a piece of shit. Like, for me personally, I just, like, sexual assault, that's just something I don't like to have in movies or shows at all. It's you know, really too real to a lot of people, unfortunately. And it's uncomfortable. I think they could have made him a scumbag without using that. But, I mean, it's certainly effective in making him unlikable and creating the urgency around his character's situation as he's, you know, scrounging around trying to salvage all that he has to really go forward in life. But it's just one of those things. I've went back and forth on several times, like, could they have done something else? Like, you know, make him a racist. Like, that's better. He had some racist tweets come out, and he got dropped from the show. Like, that's
not
fine,
that's funny. Not that racism's funny.
No,
I'm sorry.
Racism's not funny, Nico. No, but just, I know. But it's just sexual assault, rape, man. Just, especially when I saw that the, you know, they're telling him that the expose piece is going to be coming out, and the name that they used that's going to be writing the story, like, that's a real reporter that was at the front lines of breaking all the Harvey Weinstein shit. And so, like, that's just a little too real for me. I don't know. But that's, overall, I mean, it's still a,
that's
it's
what
a
I like about it, though, Dustin. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're
it's
good.
Real,
man.
You know what I'm
back,
saying?
Back and forth. Yeah, I get it for sure. But it's just, I guess I'm a little too empathetic with that. Like, I'm thinking if I was a survivor or someone, you know, if someone in my family, someone I know was a survivor of a similar situation, this is going to be very difficult for them to watch.
I get that.
And so I personally just don't like it. But it's effective. I'll give them that. And overall, the set of scenes, I'm still all in on the movie at this point because it just threw a wrench into my, you know, what we're suspecting, who the actual villain is. Nope, fuck that. It's a 17-foot-tall naked lady with big tits. So who knows where we're going.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, AJ is at the house and goes inside. He sees the basement door still open, or still propped open, and all of Keith's toiletries are in the bathroom. He goes in the bedroom and sees Tess's luggage. He calls the company and asks if someone's staying here at the moment. He complains that no one's come by and looked at the place. He says the system is idiotic, and she hangs up on him. He's washing his face, talking to his mom now. Mom doesn't know what to tell others. He says to tell them that she's a lying fucking bitch. She asks, when can he come home and see us? Detroit is only 4 hours away. He hangs up on her and takes a call from his friend, and I'm not going to say what he says, but they're at a bar now, and he asks what really happened. He's going to believe his boy. AJ tells his friend they fucked, but it took some convincing. At first, she said, no, but we fooled around, and she was down. I'm a persistent dude. It was like Eye of the Tiger. AJ is back home when he calls Megan and leaves her a voicemail. He drunkenly apologizes and says he's not mad at her, and he hopes she's not mad at him. Please call me back, and I'll apologize again. AJ wakes up and is vomiting in the toilet. He finds Keith's toothbrush on the floor and looks through Tess's luggage now. He finds her laptop and tries to access it, but chunks it at the wall after one attempt. He makes coffee and finds her keys. He goes into the basement calling out for anyone. He says, I have a gun, and I'm going to come down and open up on anyone who's down there. He gets dressed and gets a knife and flashlight. Last chance, he yells out. All right, bitch, prepare to get fucked. He finds the mirror pointing at the wall and hears a thud. He pulls the rope and opens the door. He finds a secret room, and he now researches if underground rooms can be factored into square footage. It can't be factored into square footage, but can be in total area. Hell yeah, bitch, he says. He whips out the tape measure and starts his measurements, which was one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen, honestly. He finds the other secret door and begins measuring down the stairs. AJ is stoked he's got so much area he can use to sell. He yells out if anyone is here. He finds the cages but keeps measuring. He sees a room with a light protruding into the hall. He walks towards it and sees blankets on the floor and a TV showing a breastfeeding instruction. Suddenly, the tape measure shoots back at him. He yells out who's there as he holds his knife out. He takes off running. He drops his flashlight and he sees the giant woman walking towards him. He runs again and falls. He's locked in a cage below where Tess is. Flashback, and we meet Frank, the original homeowner. He gets in his car and goes to the store. He asks a worker for plastic sheets, diapers, baby stuff. She takes him to the aisle and asks how old is the baby. He says they're doing home birth. She asks what else he needs. Where's the list? He gets his things and goes back to his car. A woman catches his eye and he begins to follow her in his car. He parks and watches her go in her home. He exits his car and changes into a uniform for someone who works at the utility company. He knocks on her door and says he's just checking to see if everything is up to par. He says there's been some outages. He tells her everything is fine and to call if she has issues. Frank is back home and his neighbor Doug tells him there's going to be a sign in his yard tomorrow. They're moving. I hate to do it, but if we don't, we might not be able to sell next year. Neighborhood is going to hell. Frank says he ain't going anywhere. Frank goes inside and we hear a woman screaming from the basement. Tess asks AJ if anyone knows we're here. She tells AJ he has to stay calm. You cannot get upset. If so, she gets upset. The woman is above and she hands down a milk bottle to AJ, who refuses to drink from it. Tess tells him to drink. Tess drinks from the bottle and AJ refuses again. She just wants you to be her baby. The woman opens up the cage and jumps down, hugging Tess, calling her baby. She babbles to AJ and takes him out. She drops him in the room with a TV and plays with him. Tess now jumps and pulls herself out of the cage. The woman pulls AJ to her breast to feed. And the next set of scenes are ending. What'd you think, Brian?
So, you know, this set of scenes is a bit of a mixed bag for me, personally. You know, AJ being so fucking oblivious to everything, you know, after you get that soundtrack pop in, like something's bad's going to happen, you know, that ominous score, while he's discovering the door and starts to measure everything, despite the fact that it's some horrid shit down there, it almost makes me laugh. And, you know, unlike Mike said, you know, to me, I didn't want to laugh in that situation. Like, I wanted the tension the whole time. Like what we get when Big Mama pulls that tape measure and he starts running down the tunnels. Like, that's what I wanted the whole time. I didn't want the horror comedy aspect there. You know, back to the camera work being phenomenal in the dark in those tunnels, you know, making you feel very claustrophobic in there with him. I thought that was fantastic camera work. But then we get that flashback scene. And again, super jarring, just out of nowhere. And I agree with Dustin and what he said before. A lot of this really doesn't pay off. But putting that aside, it's very interesting. Like, Richard Brake is fucking phenomenal. He's a phenomenal pick to play this guy. He's a great actor. And I love all the pastel colors on these houses. Like, I mean, have you guys seen Edward Scissorhands? This has got to be an homage to Edward Scissorhands. Like, I don't know.
That's filmed in my home county, by the way.
Nope, okay. Well, I mean, it's got to be, right? Surely.
Yeah.
But also, you know, having the screen ratio flip from widescreen to, what is it, 4:3 or 16:9. Man, that was a really cool directorial choice there. Like, I haven't seen that before. And I thought that was brilliant. Like, I thought that was really cool. Not even sure I even noticed it the first time I watched it. And so, okay, I'm going to say this and try not to take it the wrong way, and I may even backtrack on it, but Brake is creepy as fuck. But a lot of what he's done is just really implied. Like, we see the empty room with the camera and all, but that's it. Like, all we do is just see it the after, like, years down the road. We never see it being used. Now, let me say, I don't need to see graphic detail, but I don't know. What if you like had an actress in there terrified, have him walk in and maybe shut the door, and, you know, the audience and the camera, let your mind create more instead of, you know, seeing it. But it's just something I feel like to go the extra mile to make it even more creepy. I don't need nor want to see assault or anything, but like taking us closer, seeing a victim, making us really hate break even more, I think that would be needed there almost. But again, that's only if we're going to get something further with break. And like I said, I agree with Dustin. His character seems so wasted, especially with the payoff we get. So again, maybe this is me backtracking. Maybe we don't need all that stuff if we're not going to get a payoff with it. Now back to the hole and that fucking bottle and the close up of the little hairs on it. Look, that's fucking. That's great. That's a great choice. Like, apparently that was initially a mistake. Some of Matthew Patrick Davis, who plays Big Mama, and he does a fantastic job, by the way. But some of his wig got stuck on the nipple, and Krager thought it looked really gross and wanted to add more to it. So I thought that was a good creative choice there. Again, though, how much time has passed? how much time has Tess been down there in that hole? How is she survive? Is she just surviving on this fucking Big Mama juice here? Like just
titty milk, baby.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Just a few questions I had.
It's definitely breast milk. Like I have no doubt about that.
It's which the has finest a lot Cambodian of, breast milk.
Damn it. I mean, it does have a lot of nutrients. Anyway, so again, I think to me, we know the time jump slightly because when he makes a call, you know, the door's cracked open. AJ comes in, he calls and says, has anyone been at my place? And she says, I haven't rented to anybody in like 2 weeks or a couple weeks, which I assume that's okay. That's our time jump. And again, that could have just been a passing line or some exposition. But to me, I at least have an idea of where we are. Because Tess sure doesn't know how long she's been down there. She even mentioned it in the, you know, coming up here. So, but I like this character work with AJ. I really do. But, you know, like kind of Dustin said in the last set of scenes, I almost wish this stuff wasn't here just because I feel like you could have put something else in here to make him a piece of shit. Because it's uncomfortable at times. You know, he's a piece of shit to his mom on the phone. He goes and gets drunk with his friend. By the way, that's a director cameo. I appreciate that. But, you know, he comes back and he calls her. And again, we're supposed to hate this guy. Buddy, do we ever hate this guy for picking up the phone and calling and apologizing for offending her? Says he's not mad at her. Like, just a really big narcissistic piece of shit. And I don't know. I just kind of wish it wasn't there, but because it is, that's, you know, that's the character development we get. Now, I will say this. Once he finds the hole and realizes there's like tunnels and shit, the fact that he pulls out he's Googling how much the house will be worth for more square footage and he takes out the tape measure. I fucking think that's hilarious. Like, I can't help but laugh. Like, that's just such a dick move. Again, he's very hateable, but I do laugh at some of the stuff he does. I can't help it. Like, that's just such a, God, like a me person. Like, oh, I wonder how much I can sell this fucking house for because I'm about to be out of money. But I think all that is good. Then we get the tension. We're back into the tension with Big Mama and whoever pulls the tape measure. So here's all I'll say about Frank and Richard Brake. Great job performing the character. But I'm with you two. I just wish we could have gotten a little more. Not in the same way that Brian did, though, because I'm fine with theater of the mind. Like, I understand what he's saying completely, but I'm fine with theater of the mind and all that being implied. Plus, we get the exposition dump later with the homeless man kind of telling her exactly what's been going on there. So we get the exposition dump explanation. So I'm fine with not seeing it, but this character is so creepy and so well performed by Richard Brake that I want to see more. I want to know how sadistic he is. We just don't get it. It's all implied. And I wish there was a little bit more depth there for sure. Now, I mean, look, I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh at AJ getting breastfed, but buddy, that shit was hilarious, man. I know it's supposed to be scary and creepy, but especially with the hair on the bottle, it's fucking funny. I'm sorry. But I do like that we get genuine moments of suspense and tension back with AJ and Tess. I think this set of scenes is a mixed bag for sure, but I like some of the comedy, but I wish we could have gotten more from Richard Brake's character.
Yeah. So like you said, we do find out that a couple weeks has passed. And to me, that's a big deal because it's cause for concern for Tess, her stuff's still there. Her car's still out front. And now that we know it's been a couple weeks, it's like, oh shit, is she still alive down there? And then, yeah, man, the whole scene where he goes to the club with his buddy there, and he's like, yeah, we fucked it. She took some convincing. That's just disgusting dialogue there, man. You know, look up the word consent in the dictionary, bud. And so now, at this point in the movie, I want whatever demise he has coming to him. Like, I'm praying on his downfall at this point. Then, dumbass calling her. And first, he victim blames her. Like, I'm not even mad at you. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mad at her? You ain't got a reason to be mad at her, you dick. And then he's apologizing. And so even if he makes it out of this house, he's fucked in court because all the good attorney has to do is like, well, what are you apologizing for if you didn't do anything wrong? He's fucked. So I'm kind of pleased with that. when he goes in the bedroom here and he's rifling through her shit, that was a hell of a no look pass from the MacBook to the from the bed to the dresser there. Like, that was impressive. Just like over the shoulder on the dresser.
Yes. Like, I wonder how many takes that took. Like, because I mean, that was, I was like, what?
It's like white chocolate Jason Williams no look pass. Nice. Like, beautiful. But and then it's just like, I just put my notes, what a dumbass douche. Like, I get thinking that you found an extra bit of money here for when you sell the house. But my first thought would have been, I wonder if this is what happened to the last renters. Not, ooh, here's some extra square footage. Let me get a tape measure. Because, you know, there's stuff still here and they're missing, bud. And you just found this secret lair in your basement. And then especially after you go down there and you see the nasty bed in that room, yeah, with the tripod and the bloody handprint on the wall. Like, I'm probably thinking, oh, shit, this might be a crime scene. But nope. Let's see how much square footage we got here. Very intense shit as he finds that TV playing and he loses the tape measure out of his hand and then the flashlight goes out. Like, that's a very tense moment. Love that. Then, hey, Tess, she's alive. It's a huge relief to see her alive. She looks like hell, but that's okay, baby. I'll nurse you back to health. It's the next thing, though, is this, the throwback scene is just very odd to me. Like, it just seems so out of place to go back in time here, especially, and give us this little backstory. I mean, it looks great, first of all. I think they captured the aesthetic of the 80s or whatever the time period was. Like, it all looks authentic. But the ending just made it irrelevant to me. I almost wish that they would have introduced this at the first of the movie and had these two storylines going side by side to where they could have spent more time on this. This is what I was saying. Like, to get us where they tried to take us, they needed another 45 to 50 minutes in the movie because instead they're showing us this here.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, we don't have time to really show you what happened throughout the years. I want some progression. I don't want to see what happened to the victims, but I want some progression. I want it to mean more that they showed us this instead of a little 3-minute clip of, you know, dude going to the grocery store and then sneaking in a woman's house. It just seemed very irrelevant, especially what we find out and the next set of scenes, like with him, spoiler, still being alive. Whatever. I mean, I get that they show that he's clearly a predator and it gives us a glimpse, but it's just, there's no payoff. It's abandoned. And then, yeah, going back to the people in the pit here, I'd rather starve than to put that bottle in my mouth. Fuck that. And then there's no real explanation as to why this woman is like this either. Like, she got superpowers because of inbreeding. Like, I know it's going to cause mutations and she's going to be a genetic freak, not the Scott Steiner kind of way, like the other kind of way. But it's just kind of left up to interpretation. I don't really like that. Like, she's 7 feet tall, superhuman strength, whoop, whoop. She lives in this dungeon and she she captures everybody. I don't really like how there's no explanation as to why she evolved to be like this.
All right, here's the ending. Tess walks the halls and hears AJ scream. Tess sneaks past the TV room and accidentally kicks the tape measure. She takes off running and tries to escape, but the door is locked. She breaks the window downstairs and crawls out with the assistance of Andre, the homeless man. The woman sneaks back into the basement. Tess tells him she has someone else. We have to help him. She says we can't leave him. He says, you're lucky and you should count yourself lucky. She ain't even the worst thing in there. Tess says she will kill him. He says she comes out at night and will look for you. AJ walks a tunnel now and finds bells tied to string. Tess walks through the neighborhood as AJ hears the woman pursuing him and he runs. AJ makes it to a door and the woman backs away from him and leaves, and AJ goes inside the room. Tess makes it to a gas station and asks if they have a phone. AJ finds a filthy bedroom with a TV on. He hears a man cough in the bed. AJ walks over to him asking if he's okay. Tess tells the cops she's been held prisoner for she doesn't know how long, as the cop takes a radio. He asks if she has ID. She says she's not a crackhead and there's a man in serious danger. Frank asks AJ for water and he takes a drink. AJ says, I'm going to get out of here and get help and let everyone know what's going on down here. Cops will swarm here soon. Frank points over to the nightstand again and AJ just carries the whole thing over. Tess takes the cops to the house and they don't take her seriously at all. The other cop says they have a call with shots fired. He says she's lucky they don't take her downtown to sleep this off in jail. They drive away, not helping her. AJ finds all of Frank's tapes when he raped women and recorded it. Tess breaks a window and is back in the house and she grabs her keys. AJ is disgusted with the videos and asks what's wrong with him. Frank reveals a gun and AJ backs away. Tess cranks her Jeep up as we see Frank shoot and kill himself. The woman storms out the house and Tess runs into her and pins her to the house. Tess exits the Jeep and goes back in the house to find AJ. AJ grabs the gun and begins to make his escape. Tess walks past the TV room, says hello when she sees a light. AJ shoots her and walks to her and apologizes. She screams in agony as the two make it outside. Tess sees the woman not pinned against the house anymore. He says his keys are still in the tunnel. He's not going back. The two begin walking down the street and Andre has them hide in the water tower with him. Andre can't believe they made it this far. He says that crazy woman has lived there for over 40 years. He tells the story of all the incest down there. AJ asks where to get her help. Andre says they need to stay here. AJ says, I hurt someone and that matters. I might be a bad person, or I might be a good person who did something wrong. I'm going to fix it. Andre says, we're safe here, and in the morning we'll take her to town. He says she hasn't ever been here in 15 years. The woman breaks through the wall and rips his arm off and beats him to death with it. AJ and Tess escape and climb to the top of the water tower. She asks for him to wait, but he yells, come on. Tess yells out the gun, and AJ drops it to the ground below. The moment was too big. He pissed down his leg. AJ says, we're fucked. He says, I can get away, but you got to slow her down. He grabs Tess and throws her over. The woman dives after Tess. AJ looks over and sees Tess on top of the woman. He goes back down to the street and sees Tess still alive. He begins to apologize again, saying he was sorry and had no choice. I fucking panicked, and she started to slip. The woman sits up and grabs AJ by the throat, gouges his eyes out, and then she rips his head in half. She bends over and caresses Tess, checking her wound. Tess gets the gun and says she can't go back to the house. She presses the gun to the woman's face and kisses her fingers and presses it to Tess. Tess shoots the woman and gets up and walks down the road as the end credits roll. All right, Brian, what'd you think about the ending?
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
So yeah, I said earlier, I'm not a big fan of the ending, really. You know, besides it being a total waste with Brake and that scene with AJ, I like everything up until they leave the house, I think. The Tess escape was super tense. Not sure I loved it being the daytime, but I get it, you know, since it kind of goes with the story and Big Mama leaving the house during the evening. It does kind of lull you into a sense of security a little bit. So I think I just talked myself into, you know, not disliking that so much. But yeah, the Brake stuff, you know, like's been said, there's no payoff. You know, I think Nico brought up X and Pearl in our group chat and, you know, that you could maybe explore him a little bit more in a prequel. I mean, I don't know, because I certainly don't want to see an entire movie of Brake kidnapping and raping people for an hour and a half. And you know he's not going to get caught. So, you know, I'm not sure what you do there. But I don't know, it just didn't work for me here. What I do like are the parallels between the characters. I mean, you have Justin Long basically looking in the mirror when he's with Frank. You know, both hurt people for their own personal gain. While flip side, Tess, in a certain way, mirrors Big Mama, you know, with her wanting to take care of people and that motherly nature. You know, AJ has a chance to change that arc, but still accepts no responsibility and doesn't, while Tess does go against her nature and kills the creature woman. Sorry, am I assuming her gender is a creature thing? Anyway, stopping that, but she stops that cycle. You know, Tess does of giving up on herself for others, really. You know, I get that, but anyway. So maybe this should have just ended with Tess running Big Mama into the house. I don't know. Because, like, having AJ shoot Tess in the torso, somehow miraculously not bleeding out here, Big Mama showing some incredible strength, beating Andre with his own arm she just tore off. My favorite kill, by the way. Okay. But then we're not that high up, you know. I mean, we're not that high up here. I mean, we would have to been like 30 stories for Tess to fall off the roof, and then there'd be enough time for Big Mama to jump after her and bypass her before she hits the ground. I mean, that's the most asinine thing I've ever seen. I mean, she was already, we saw it. She was halfway down, almost about to hit the ground before Big Mama even jumps off. I don't know, let's just totally forget the part where Tess is still alive after all of this. You know, what the fuck ever. Like, it's just, it totally kills it for me. Now, I liked the Jeepers callback with the eye gouging and you know, and the ending with the Ronettes singing that Be My Baby song. It, you know, ties or into the, you know, the earlier foreshadowing with the song and the car. But the other is just, it's just too much for me to look past. That's all.
Yeah. The movie takes a little bit of a nosedive here. Look, I've kind of mentioned before that I'm just not a big fan of creature features, and this part kind of dips its toe into that a little bit with Big Mama. Now, there are some things I do like, though. I like the fact that we kind of flip it where I don't think she's the villain. She's a victim of Frank, and it's not her fault. She's the way that she is. And, I mean, again, I wish there was a little bit more into that and how that happened and why that happened, but we just kind of have to assume there. And again, we get an exposition dump here, but I just wish we could have seen it a little more on screen like that, like their interaction and why. But then to just kind of have Richard Brake's character kill himself, I, after all that, like, it just, I don't know, man, it was just not, I felt like they needed a way out. I felt like they needed something shocking. I'm not really sure what the deal with that was. But I'll be honest, man. Everything, once we get this, like, chase out of the house and they're up in this tower and all that, like, I just feel that the movie loses me. Like, everything with this, and again, I know this is like the pinnacle of these two different characters. Like, we see AJ's true colors as he throws Tess off and tries to basically kill her, whether he's admitting it or not is fine, but he basically tried to murder the woman, and Big Mama goes after her because she sees her as her baby. I get all of that, but I just think it could have been a different way of doing it. Like, I'm with you 100%. I just wish it was tighter, neater, wrap the story up better. Now, again, it does not ruin the movie for me because we've gotten a lot of good, but I would have gone a different direction. Like, again, I'm not a big fan of the Big Mama character to begin with, but I am okay with them kind of flipping the norm here and having her be a victim just as well as everyone else is. Like, she only knows what's been done to her, and so since she's only seen it this way, she's watched that baby video for the last however many years, then that's all she knows. That's all she knows how to do. And so she's a victim just as well. The real villain shot himself. Now, make that mate. Well, one of the real villains. The other real villain is AJ, because, again, he tried to murder a woman after apparently, allegedly, raping another one. So, again, I don't mind the way these characters end up. I just would have liked to see something different, I guess. I don't know. I can't critique it too much because I'm not providing a better option. But I don't know. It didn't land for me.
So, I guess the breastfeeding scene was this set of scenes, not the last one. And I picked that up because the first thing I wrote was, brother, I'd bite her nipple off and get my ass out of that house. No shot. I'd let her put that tit in my mouth. And that's a true statement. There's no way. But anyway, moving on. So the hobo saying that, you know, she ain't even the worst thing that's in there, alluding back to the dad that we saw in the flashback. But again, I say it was ignored. Like, his whole storyline, his whole backstory was just ignored and cast aside after they teased it to us here. But it was nice seeing that hobo, or seeing that the hobo that was running after her earlier was just trying to save her, you know, and not hurt her. That was nice. But he just told us everything that we saw in that flashback. He told us that he's been keeping people in the basement and raping them and incest and all this stuff. So why even have that flashback earlier? All that did was prolong the runtime for no reason. And we see, the dad's room that's down there. And, brother, I know it smells crazy in there. My God, imagine what that stench is like. But what's the purpose of him being alive at this point? Or being in the movie at all, but, not to beat a dead horse. He's alive. He's here. We get it. But what's the point of him being still alive in this part of the movie? Because he just lays there in the bed, nothing comes up, and then he offs himself. But I do love how the cops show up finally, and she just looks like a hobo. Like, it shows that this, what the situation in parts of Detroit is. Like, it's so dire that they just, they can't afford to believe everything. They can't afford to believe that she's telling the truth. And it's it's a great callback to earlier, you know, when they didn't have the resources to send a cop to the house, and now the cops are there and they're like, yeah, you need to sleep this one off. Think she's a crackhead. But now one thing though, when they get to the house and they're talking about how, you know, they don't believe her, whatever, the cops can't tell that the window is broken from the inside. Like, clearly, if she was inside and she broke her way out, there's a reason she broke her way out. She would be making up this whole thing. So if they're going to say, well, you broke this window, you know, if she broke it from the outside, then, yeah, it looks like she's trying to break in. She's up to no good. Deputy Dewey would have, you know, he would have busted this mutant woman, put a cap in her ass already. He'd have probably got stabbed 3 times in the spine, but he'd walk away from it. I think it's pretty ironic as AJ's, you know, watching these films down there with the dad and asks what's wrong with him. I mean, they're both predators. It's just that one recorded his actions and one didn't. And so that, I guess, is the one good thing of the dad still being alive is AJ, we get to see that look of disgust in AJ's eyes, like the piece of shit realizes maybe for a second that he's a piece of shit. But then, yeah, so here he kills himself again. Why? Serve no purpose at all. Makes you think maybe there's going to be this big payoff and maybe the dad's going to have a change of heart and he's going to be the key to getting him out of here. No, serves nothing, no purpose. Then when Tess runs the woman into the house, like she gets out and she rams her car into the woman and rams it up against the house. Like, this car ain't got no airbags. Bullshit. Those airbags would have been deployed, but we're just going to ignore logic there. And then after you get here, like, Tess, baby, go home. Get your shit and leave. Like, don't go back down there. I don't care that you just smashed her and you think, oh, I've won. Leave while you can. You don't know what other bad shit could be down there. You've been through hell. Then you get shot. Kind of deserve it. Don't go back down there. Go home. It is very tense, though, when they're leaving the house and the woman is gone. Like, that's a oh shit moment. You know, you got the looming threat of danger. It's adding great suspense there. But I laugh. So I've seen this movie 3 times now, and I laugh every time as she said, you know, as they're sitting around the hobo's fire, and he goes, she never came in this motherfucker. And then right on cue, boom, she busts in like the Kool-Aid man through his wall, rips his arm off and beats him to death. That was awesome. That was good shit. I do like the development in this batch of scenes, though, with AJ. Like, we know he's a piece of shit, but then he has this introspective scene where he realizes it and vows to change. And then he just shows his true colors again. Like, he sucks. He throws her off the water tower there or whatever. But then, yeah, just come the fuck on, man. Like, he pushed her off the top of that. And I agree. It's not that high. But she survived. She's fine. The woman just happened to jump down like Spider-Man or Superman and speed to the bottom of the pile, you know, and save her, break her fall like that. No, I ain't buying it. And then the woman pulls a fucking Undertaker at WrestleMania and just sits right up and crushes his head. Like, that was satisfying seeing her sit up and kill him like that. But what the fuck? Her death was it was like a mercy kill. And that's all it took. Like, the ending just fell so flat for me. It's too much going on. Too many moving parts that weren't tied up. Too much stuff was abandoned. It made what we saw earlier in this set of scenes irrelevant. And they made the inbred freak a sympathetic character a little bit. I don't feel sorry for that freak. Like, no. It just seemed like a cop-out for an ending. It's such a good movie. And then we'll just have her shoot the bitch and survive. Forget all the building we did about AJ being a rapist and all his legal issues. Like, that was just dangled in front of you, so it really we didn't need that. Fuck the storyline we teased about the dad being a rapist. The years and years that apparently that's been going on. We don't need to see anything. Just know that it happened. Know there's videotapes. And then he kills himself. You know, AJ's backstory there was to show that we shouldn't be surprised by his actions in the end sequence. But still, like, I wanted more finality with his situation and more payoff with everything that we've been showed and dangled up to this point. It really hurt the movie's overall score for me.
All right, guys, let's jump into our social media comments and questions. We got quite a few. We'll do Facebook first. Kevin Potoff calling fun movie, lots of twist. It's no Friday the 13th Part 3, but still awesome.
Twist is dirt.
All right, man. There we go. We ain't heard that one in a while. All right, Michelle Mirza, big fan of the show, commented, I went into this movie knowing nothing, and I'm so glad I did. What a crazy twist this movie has.
Old dick twist.
What a crazy twist.
I agree with... God damn it. I will say, I agree with Michelle. The first time you watch this movie, it's better if you know absolutely nothing, which is exactly what I did. I didn't know shit about this movie going in. Hadn't seen a trailer, hadn't heard anything, but hey, you should watch this movie, so I did. I will say that's probably the best way to view this film.
And she went on to say she loved every minute of it. Abby Renee commented, I went into this movie knowing nothing about it, and I'm honestly very happy I did. Definitely added to the tension and made the twist that much better. My love for Justin Long still runs deep, and the tape measure scene still makes me laugh every time I watch it. Great pick. I thought the tape measure scene was fucking hilarious, honestly.
Me too. I thought it was fucking funny.
I mean, I thought it was funny too. I just didn't want to laugh at that point. Like, to me, it just didn't fit. That's all.
I feel you. It's, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
But that's just Justin Long's character sometimes. I don't know. Mike, have you seen the movie Tusk?
Yes.
He's a piece of shit in that movie too.
I'd say he does a good job being a piece of shit there too. That movie's rough. That movie sucks.
All right, let's jump over to Twitter now. Randy Smith commented, damn, Nico, this might be your best pick. I went into it with low expectations, and it blew me away. This might be the second best movie of the month behind Phantoms. Keep up the great work, and one last thing for our retire until August. The best horror movie of 23 was The Natty, and go Dogs. I don't think that was a horror movie, man. That was pretty good for you.
Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
Who?
All right, Sean Irwin tweeted us saying, movie caught me off guard. I went in there knowing nothing, had a damn good time. Best horror movie I saw last year. Hell yeah, brother. All right. We got a lot on Instagram, so here we go. Here for the booze commented, Justin Long is what kept me watching, LOL, but I agree about the reveal. Why was she a giant? I wish she had a tiny more backstory. I feel like Dustin would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Chris_2020 went in knowing nothing, and it was one of the best, most shocking theater experiences I've had. Even saw it three times in the theaters. Shit.
Jesus.
To me, this is a horror comedy done right. Okay. Miss Mulf commented, I loved it. As this movie goes on, you have no idea which direction it's going to take. It's great. All right. Jesse Kraft commented, it took me a while to decide if I love this movie or not. First half of the movie, I was all in. The second half was a little disappointing. Maybe I was expecting something different, but overall, I really liked it. Did any of you guys feel that way too? We'll definitely touch on that. I think we have, really. Justin Long really made the movie enjoyable with a thumbs up emoji. Tons of fun _comics comment. This movie was my favorite of the year last year. Okay. M. Strickland 91 comment. Man, there's a lot. I'm going to take a water break. All right, watch this for the first time soon after it came out, and I got to say I enjoyed it. The dynamic between Tess and Keith was pretty interesting. That WTF moment where you think there's something wrong with Keith had me a little worried, but thankfully they didn't go that route with his character. I know we got Tusk, but will there ever be a horror movie where Justin Long actually survives? He definitely did deserve to in this one, though. I laughed my ass off when he started measuring the camera room and further down into the dungeon to maximize his rental price. Richard Brake was awesome, a sick bastard of a character, but he killed it, literally. The mother monster threw me for a loop, especially when she made AJ take a titty for the team. Quite surprised they didn't kill him. Looking forward to the review, guys. All right, Danny Cnap's coming. I love the first half of this movie. The scene where Tess finds the room with the bed and the camera really freaked me out because it's something that could actually happen. When the creature daughter thing appeared, it lost me in the second half. And 13Leon7 replied, 100% this. It's hard for horror fans to say something is too far-fetched, but this just got ridiculous. Everything about the second half of this movie just annoyed me. All right, yeah, Rochelle Matt commented, I like this movie a lot. It was a wild ride, to say the least. Haha, a theme I noticed throughout the movie was that no one took Tess for her word. At the start, Keith needs proof that she also booked this place. Then when Tess finds the room in the basement, Keith needs to see it for himself, even though Tess already told him that it was a red flag. Obviously, the cops don't believe her. Even when AJ falls into the hole and Tess tells him to play along with what the mother wants, he doesn't listen to her. While I don't think that's the main commentary of the movie, I thought it was a neat and relatable touch. It kind of is what this movie was based on, though. Look into like what inspired him,
right. I think it's also it's a very common theme in horror, though. Like, I feel like we say it all the time, like, "Oh, it's so annoying how this is the typical one believes a moment." So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, just a few more comments. Missy Hutchinson walk on. I'm sorry, I have to say it, but I don't get the hype. I wanted to like it, but I didn't. Hey, I get it. I get it. That's fair. I mean, it's no tourist trap or anything, Missy, but, you know, I get it. That was uncalled for. That was uncalled for. All right, Gail the Snail commented, so out of you gentlemen, which one of you wants the titty monster to call you sometime?
Dustin.
Whoa.
Boom. Not me. I'm going to sit this one out.
To quote the other Instagram comment, like, I would take the titty for the team, but I don't want the titty monster to call me sometime. Come on.
Titty monster. All right,
and the last comment we have is one I want to address. Love to Journey commented, horrible, stupid, joke of a movie, boring and ridiculous. One of the worst films I have ever seen. Who has two posts and follows three people with no followers. I really hate horror fans a lot of times. They say some of those bullshit stuff online. I'm just going to leave it at that. Horror fans are ridiculous.
There's a whole movie about horror. I posted that
from my burner on accident, okay? I posted that from my burner on accident.
I believe it.
All right, Kevin Durant. All right, buddy. No, I was going to say, as Dustin knows, there are two types of fans on the internet that you can never please. Horror and professional wrestling. That, like, then there's a lot of crossover there, so, you know, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Can never make them happy.
You know, Scream 5 had a whole subplot about this entire
thing. No! Great movie, by the way.
Mid.
You're mid.
All right, let's jump over to fun facts. Who wants to go first?
I have two.
I mean, I need a break from talking for a minute.
Hey, Lou Temple didn't take a break. You buck up. Let's go.
Yeah, he's the GOAT, and I'm not.
Yeah, he's a legend. Richard Brake shared a story on Instagram about attending a late-night screening of the movie. He noted that a particular group of teenagers sitting a few rows behind him were really into the film and were terrified. When it was over, they were leaving the theater and using the flashlights on their phones. When the light accidentally caught Brake's face, the teens recognized him from the movie and screamed and ran away from him in genuine fear.
Good shit.
That would make me laugh. If I was
good shit. Brake.
Although not officially credited in any way, Jordan Peele was an invisible hand in shaping the eventual story. Star Georgina Campbell tells IndieWire in an interview, Zach Krieger is good friends with Jordan Peele, and I think he spoke to Jordan Peele a lot while he was writing the film, and Jordan Peele saw an early cut of it as well, Campbell said. So he definitely was kind of a part of the essence of the movie in a way.
I got just a couple. Zach Krieger originally offered the role of AJ to Zac Efron, but Efron turned it down, causing Krieger to rethink the role and offer it to Justin Long, who accepted. That would have been interesting. I do want more Zac Efron. I think he's kind of underrated. I'd like to see him get into horror, but that would have been weird.
My man's about to be in the Von Erich movie. Let's go.
I think it would have cranked up the douchiness a lot more. Yes. But you know, he would have been a typical actor, like what you think of a Hollywood douchebag instead of a anyway. And then the last one I got is, while the exterior neighborhood shots were filmed in the Brightmoor neighborhood in Detroit, the rest of the film was shot in Sofia, Bulgaria.
Oh, damn. Crap.
Bulgaria. I said that wrong the first time. Bulgaria, that's it. That's an interesting location.
Interesting. Go ahead. Yeah, it is.
All right, I just got a couple. The script started out after Zach Krieger read the Gavin DeBecker's book, The Gift of Fear, a chapter which encourages women to trust their intuition when confronted by obviously dangerous men. He used it as a writing exercise and began crafting a 30-minute short that consisted entirely of a conversation in which a woman continues to ignore a mounting series of red flags. He liked it well enough that he knew he had the makings of a longer film and began conceptualizing a broader story for the characters. I really like that. And here's another fun fact we kind of touched on, but I'm just going to read it from IMDb. The film is set on 476 Barbary Street. The year 476 was when the barbarians invaded Rome. Director Krieger insisted this is unintentional and purely coincidental. And if you don't believe him, that's fine. But I've watched a couple of his interviews, and he seemed pretty adamant that he didn't know. And then here's another thing I'm going to tell y'all that y'all probably won't believe, but it was with Collider on YouTube. And, you know, Georgina said, I like Justin Long's kill because it was like a callback to Jeepers Creepers. And he said, I hadn't even seen Jeepers Creepers till we cast Justin Long.
Bullshit.
Oh, that's bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on that one.
Hey, I'm just quoting the man what he said.
The quote wrestling one more time. He's keeping kayfabe, buddy. He's keeping
Hey, come on the show instead of straight. Come on the show, right. Zach.
Hey, no joke. Whenever I was on call last week, I think it was like 3 a.m. I think I tweeted him saying, "Hey, man, you want to come on the show?" I was just tweeting everybody because I was bored at work. I was like, "Hey, y'all want to come on the show?"
Hey,
shooting my shot at 3 a.m.
Hey, man, shoot or shoot.
Okay. Speaking of shooting, this movie was shot for a cool $4.5 million and grossed $45 million worldwide.
So very successful film for sure. A lot of, again, it really got its legs up underneath it on HBO Max.
Being one of the first films post COVID kind of hurt that in the theaters because I wanted to go see it too.
Absolutely. It was really, you know, around that time it was kind of starting, I mean, horror and movies in general was kind of starting to pop back in. And but it was available really quick on HBO Max. So I was like, eh, whatever. I will say this movie had a difficult time getting made, which I know that you guys mentioned in the group chat earlier, but that kind of shocked me just considering some of the horror that gets greenlit, which I'm fine with all unique original ideas, but this was certainly one. I'm just surprised that there weren't more chomping at the bit to just do something different like this.
Yeah, even A24 shot them down, which is mind-blowing, considering some of the shit they've greenlit. But
your favorite stuff, Nico. That's your favorite stuff.
No. I do like some A24 movies, but all right, let's jump into our favorite kill, least favorite kill, and the rating. Brian, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. I'll be short and sweet. My favorite kill is Andre having his arm torn off and beaten to death with it. That shit's great. My least favorite kill, I think Brake killing himself off screen. I just thought, I don't know, the whole thing was just a mess. Like I said earlier, very unique movie. It's something different. You know, I give it a ton of credit for that, especially this day and age. And like I said, I really enjoyed it until the finale. And for that, I gave it a 6.5.
Yeah, my favorite kill is AJ. You know, the callback to Jeepers Creepers, you know, really kind of helps that a little bit. Like, I thought that was clever. I don't care what they say. That shit was on purpose. My least favorite kill is also Richard Brake off screen, just because, again, I wanted more of the character. I wanted to see more inside the mind of that guy and, you know, how that worked. We just didn't get enough there. And then to kill him off, just kind of nonchalant as he shoots himself after staying alive this whole time. That's when he decides to kill him. Like, that's just kind of, I don't know. Anyway, I'm done. Very unique, very different. Again, has a very plain, not plain, but a very like cut off three act structure where this movie is like a bunch of different movies squished together and it all kind of ties. So I like its originality. I think it's a fun watch, honestly, even though it has some really dark themes and it's, you know, has some interesting messages that it's trying to get across. But it is a fun watch. I mean, because of some of the characters. Again, great cast. I think it's shot really well. I love the way it looks. All that stuff is A+. All that being said, the ending really drags it down some. It's one of my favorite horror movies of last year, but even upon these rewatches, I just can't quite put my finger on exactly why I don't love it. I guess the ending would be the real reason, but there's a couple other things too that I just can't quite say I love this movie. I like this movie. So for that, I gave this movie a 7.25.
All right. So least favorite kill to me was the dad, because, again, why was he even in the movie at all, let alone why was he still alive and why did he off himself? Like, it's just such a cop-out to get another kill in the numbers, I guess. Favorite kill to me was Keith, because it was so unexpected. Like, you didn't know what direction the movie was taking you at this point, and it just came out of nowhere, and I thought the effects of his head smashing on the wall there was great. As far as the movie, though, I think it's a really solid movie until the last 10 minutes. Like, it's a fun, easy watch. That helps a lot. Casting was great. I think it looked great. All that is good. It's just really took me out of it there towards the end. I think you needed about 45 more minutes to fully get it out there. And then you're talking a movie that's 2.5 hours long. It's just way too much. Old man being alive, pointless. Could have just had the hobo explain what's been going on in that house. Oh, wait, you did that, and you still showed us the backstory anyway. You know, the ending made it fall so flat for me that had they got that part right, we're talking a movie that's easy, 7.5, 8, maybe even higher, because the early part was so good. But as it stands, man, I got to go a 5.5.
All right. My favorite kill is Keith. First watch, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I remember yelling, "Oh shit," when this giant woman ran out and bashed his head against the wall. But I did write AJ and Andre have good kills as well. Excuse me. Worst kill, Frank's suicide, was a piece of shit, deserved a worse death. However, I do like that because it's real. How many times have we seen serial killers commit suicide because they don't want to face what they've done? Like when the cops bring up, you know, like Israel Keyes, Leonard Lake. They didn't want to go to trial and they killed themselves before they could get caught. All right. I just wrote a little summary. Last week we reviewed the movie X, and this week we did Barbarian. Two 2022 horror films I thoroughly enjoyed and regret not seeing in theaters. Both of these movies were a huge bright spot as a horror fan who was wanting something new and fresh. I have so much I like about Barbarian. The cast is incredible. The concept, atmosphere, mood, kills. A lot of the movie touches on real-life situations like serial killers, rapists, the dynamics between a man and a woman, the effects on a community when crime and poverty takes over. Let's see where I was. I also had some really funny moments. I laughed my ass off when Justin Long whipped out the tape measure, and that scene with the hair hanging off the bottle nipple was forever gross to me. And I just want to touch on the incest thing. I know it's kind of questionable, like, with the woman, like, why she's so strong, but it makes you think of the other horror movies, like Wrong Turn, The Hills Have Eyes, how those creatures become so strong after years of incest. And maybe this movie was meant to be taken more seriously than those, and you know, that's just my explanation of it. I could totally understand if you don't like it, though. But my cons are some of Tessa's decision-making, albeit that's how Zach wrote her character. Key telling her to go the same direction as he was just in the tunnel made no sense at all. Just the fact that he went down there in the first place didn't make any sense. The cops are the worst in this. Like, goddamn, they deserve to get killed by the mother, too. Overall, I'm a big fan. This is a film I've watched several times, whether it just be as background noise or, like, you know, sincerely watching. I love the cast and look forward to seeing more from Zach Cregger in the future. Answer my tweet, brother. Come on the show. And I wrote, Dustin, you almost nailed my score. I gave it an 8.75.
All right. So that gives us a composite score of 7. So 7 even, which is exactly what IMDb has.
IMDb.
Well, look at these geniuses. Wow. These smart sons of bitches at IMDb, man. They know what's up.
Hell yeah. All right, guys, that was fun. Any final thoughts before I just shout out our blood donors and Dustin can announce his pick?
No, let's do it.
Oh, shit, it's my pick?
Yeah. All right, big shout out to our blood donors. We really appreciate y'all. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J., Nina, Michelle Mirza, Andrew Ferguson, Carrie Adams, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, Eric Doolittle, Sean Irwin, Brian Samick, and Gail Kuntz, Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Hunter Nelson, Dennis Kennedy, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast, Heather Smith, Kylie Denise, all the way from Australia, Adrian Aiello, Jake Hambrick, Clay Moore, Karen, and Matt Strickland. And we also have a legendary blood donor where they film review, and that's also Matt Strickland. Just want to say I appreciate y'all. Y'all take a big burden off us, and we really, really appreciate it. Dustin, announce your pick for next week, brother.
All right. So originally, back when we picked that this month was going to be a freestyle month, I originally picked 2022's Hellraiser reboot, and that was going to have us four like brand new movies for the month of January. But then I was doing a little rewatch of all the Kevin Smith films, and I watched Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and there's a clip in that movie that I was like, oh, fuck, now that movie's on my mind. I got to pick it because Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms. Word, bitch, Phantoms like a motherfucker. So I picked 1998's Phantoms. It's got a great cast. Haven't seen it in years, and I mean years. But I was like, you know, I can't think of another time when I'll get to pick this movie. So I'm excited to rewatch it. I know that Nico, I bet Nico's not going to like this movie. And I'll say going in, I bet Mike doesn't like this movie, but I think Brian and I are going to be on the same page.
I just want to say I love you. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't think you're going to like it, Dustin, just being honest.
I think there's a chance you don't like it either, man.
Most of Mars vibes going on.
Nah, man. It's not that soon, too.
Nico, it's not as bad as Ghost of Mars, man. I tell you that much right now.
I don't know.
Oh, no. Not a whole lot worse.
Well,
movie day.
I'm excited to talk about it, though. It would be a funny episode.
Affleck was the bombs and Phantoms.
Hey, Affleck was good in it.
Do love me some Jen Silent Bob.
I just want to say thank you to all the fans. Really appreciate it. It's good to have you back, Brian. It was fun reviewing this movie. I've been wanting to do it for a while. Looking forward to next week, and I'm looking forward to the next month. Next month's going to be fun as well. Thank you to all the fans. We really appreciate it. Y'all have a good one. Just want to remind everybody. Don't do it out.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.